There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 762, July 2nd, 2018. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say horses and bull run wild and free in Austria. And so does Nando, at least on the team radio. Back to you, the F1 Führer.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Mercedes tried too hard. Romain reads Max's book. And will McLaren be around in 5 years? And we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Man, I am doing very good. What an exciting Grand Prix race we had on Sunday.
Super exciting, super fun, with fresh sugar-free gum.
Absolutely, and just when it looked like Silver Streak was going back to days of Uber domination, we have a double DNF, first for Mercedes since Barcelona 2016, when they self-destructed. And in a perfect case of history repeating itself, the winner in Spain 2 years ago was also the winner on Sunday. Did you enjoy the event, sir?
Absolutely, especially after people started dropping out with DNFs. There's nothing more fun and exciting.
Yes, and even though Ferrari did not win the race, they were the big winners. They are now leading both the drivers and constructors' championships. And Toto is totally kaput.
He is kaput. Poor Toto. No, and it's amazing because they were talking about scaring the opposition in practice, FP1, FP2, with their new Uber updates to the car. And it's interesting how that all backfired. I think I know what it's called.
Karma.
Bravo.
Yes, that was interesting. But it was a fantastic race. And I have to say, you know, when I saw Bottas' car slowing down, I don't know, for some reason I said, will this happen to the other car also? And we didn't have to wait too long.
Well, you know, when I saw him slowing down, I was just thinking, Bottas has got the worst karma in the industry.
Yes, and what's with these blisters on some cars, you know? I mean, Ricciardo and Lewis, man, it was pretty bad.
It was pretty bad. And loving it.
Oh, yes, it made it for a very, very exciting Grand Prix. And now we are going to Silverstone. Shall we take a little look at the qualifying before we talk more into the race on Sunday?
Absolutely, because the qualifying, sure enough, the Uber updates did work. And we had Uber domination in terms of the silver arrows locking out the front row. Also, I mean, I am stunned on the penalty on Vettel, but what can you do?
Yes. And, you know, talking of front row, they were on front row in the previous race in France also, so this was pretty good. And first pole of the season for the other quiet Finn, Signor Valtteri Bottas. Time difference was 0.019 is very, very small difference. And yeah. Bottas was also on pole here last year. So things were looking very good for him, and especially for Mercedes. Now, the Sebastian Vettel, you know, he qualified third but dropped to sixth because of a three-place penalty for blocking Sainz Jr. in Q2. And Kimi was fourth. Now, there was a lot of talk on different network, you know, especially the Sky network, which I watch and enjoy a lot. whether this penalty should have been given or not, because it did not affect the result. Both were able to move to the next stage. But the issue was, you know, if you're going to have penalties, they have to be consistent. So, again, you know, we talked about last podcast, you're referring me to referring to Brundle. It's the mistakes by the teams and the drivers that we saw not only on Saturday but Sunday also that may play a pivotal role in deciding who the five-time world champion will be this year.
No doubt about it. The mistakes, even the tiniest of mistakes.
Yes, and Max qualified for row three, sharing it with the original first lap nutcase, Romain Grosjean. Danny Rick was on row four with K-Mag, and man, what a performance from Haas team.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that was very, very impressive. They're looking, they got both their elbows out now, as they say in racing these days.
It seems like it. It's strange how they either do really well or terrible.
Yeah, but I'm glad they are, you know, getting it all together. Of all the new teams that ever came into Formula One in the last 5 years, they are the ones who are doing really well. And they went with a very sensible program, you know, buy as much as you can of the spaghetti shelf, the Barilla shelf. And we had the results now. Row 5 was all Renault, Carlito ahead of Hülkenberg. Looking more and more likely that Danny Boy will stay with Dr. Marco, which means Sainz Jr. will stay with Renault, which is good both for the team and for the driver. Now your hero, Dios, Nando qualified 14th. Even when he is losing, he is winning. At least on Saturdays, he remains the only driver to out-qualify his teammate at every Grand Prix so far this season. Actually, going back, the running score is 14-0. And that is very impressive because Stoffel Vandoorne is no slouch.
So true. But Fernando is still continuing to be el macho.
He is machismo. There is no question about it. But it's just the futon he made some years ago, he has to sleep in it. Even though now he has le couch. The couch is not very comfy, I must say.
I think it's a little comfier than you think, my friend.
Okay, give me a correct call when he's on the podium.
Thank you. Thank you very much. No, I think he's got friends on that couch.
Yeah.
Bravo.
They are not named Toto Wolff or Dr. Helmut Marko.
You're absolutely correct.
Friends in the right place, you know.
Those days are over, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wonder how much time he spends these days with Flavio in Sardinia.
None.
Yeah. Gee, I wonder why. Okay, so let's go back to the race. LCH taking the lead. And a fantastic start. The start Kimi made was reminded me of his Kimi of McLaren days.
It was. I was stunned to see Kimi being actually alert and driving. It was very impressive, splitting the Mercedes, staying out of trouble. Outstanding job, including his fight with Verstappen. Kimi was on top of it this week.
Yeah, he was not only awake and alert at the start, but he was like that throughout the race. And he did radio to his team that he got hit by one of the Red Bulls. And sure enough, that was to be expected. A left tap from you know who.
But still, I mean, you got to have a little bit of a loving tap here and there.
Yeah, this is motor racing, and the Kimi's performance was fantastic. Maybe he got a visit from Ferrari HR department, you know, talking about severance package, so it gave him new motivation.
That always does.
Now, were you surprised? I was frankly expecting in the final few stages, Sebastian is faster than you kind of message.
I expected that for sure. It would have made sense. I know in this PC world, you can't tell Rubinho to let Michael go by, but I expected it. I thought business was supposed to be business.
Yes, and I also expected that. But, you know, the thing that kept on my mind is that maybe if it was some other race, they would have done this. But it was in Austria that Rubinho had to give up his win on the last lap. So maybe that was on their mind. I don't know.
I'm sure it was.
But they don't have the F1 rules they used to have because those were shelved some years ago, if I remember correctly. Now you can order your driver to move over or whatever.
Of course.
They call it a team sport.
Exactly. There's no I in team.
Yeah, but this is a dog-eat-dog world of motor racing. So I expect that kind of stuff. Because, you know, if this guy loses championship by 2 or 3 points, then they're going to feel very bad about it.
That's my whole point. If those points at the end of the season are what they need to win the championship, I mean, who's going to cry?
Do you remember when Lewis gave his position to Bottas? I think it was in Malaysia or some race. And they kept talking, what happens if he loses by so many points?
I do.
Yeah. So we'll see how it works out. And Arriva Bene, I was watching his interview on YouTube this evening, and he said Silverstone is going to be a tough race for us, and we'll see how it works out. You know, moving on from Raikkonen, and I have to ask you, you think he's staying at Ferrari, or you think he's auf Wiedersehen now?
It's auf Wiedersehen. Good night, sayonara.
Yes. Okay, and we'll come back to him in a different situation. Poleman had fallen to fourth at the start, Poleman being Bottas, of course. But, you know, he wasted no time in getting back to second place after passing his fellow countryman, the above-mentioned Mr. Raikkonen. And surprisingly, this really surprised me, Sebastian had a slow getaway also. But the feisty fingerman was fast and coming on strong. And I did expect him to be on the podium with or without these kablamos that were happening all around him. And early laps in the race, it was looking like an easy 1-2 for Mercedes and a very nice championship cushion for LCH going into his home race this coming weekend. But you have to wait till the checkered flag is waved before you count the championship points. Now, we already talked about the team orders. As far as the Mercedes were concerned, before they dropped out, of course, were you pretty sure that this will be a 1 and 2?
Oh, I was positive. Especially, and not only that, but I felt bad for Bottas having the bad start where LCH took the lead immediately after the fight between Bottas, Raikkonen, and LCH. Once again, Bottas blowing a perfect qualifying day. I'm sure it threw a little hot water in his face when Hamilton took the lead. You know, I thought for sure a 1-2 and Vettel had to be on the podium.
And I have to say, as quickly as he came back into second, he had a fast car. And I think if the Mercedes had not dropped out, he had a really good chance of beating Lewis fair and square to win the race.
Yeah, sure.
That sounds like a sarcastic sure to me.
It's very sarcastic.
Okay. Now for Max, did you like his performance this race, sir?
Unbelievable. It was Max all grown up.
I like his radio message. Oh, don't worry. He was on the Bobby McFerrin program, you know, with people having blisters problems. He was, don't worry, I'm happy.
It was impressive, calm, cool, and collected. He likes it up at the front, and you have to give him credit, he manages tires very well.
He's a super racing talent. But, you know, being in the front, I think that also helped him. But the guy is an incredible racer. It's like a young Sebastian Vettel, you know, when he came on the scene.
I remember.
And both have been beneficiaries of Red Bull's generosity. But for Max, this was number 4 in his young but very eventful F1 career so far. He was also on the podium in the previous 2 races. With all the heat he was getting from the media, winning is the best way to butt head and silence the critics. And this victory has put him 5th in the championship with 93 points, only 3 points behind his teammate and 1 ahead of Bottas. And I gotta tell you something, man, if Ferrari, and I don't think there will be a lot of technical and mechanical issues with both Mercedes and Ferrari, but I think if they keep screwing up a little bit here, a little bit there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. This is going to be an interesting, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is still a Vettel-Lewis Hamilton championship. But my thing is, did Mercedes go too fast with this huge leap in updates? Are they going to go very conservative in Silverstone?
I don't think so because, I'm listening to Toto Wolff, and Toto Wolff doesn't come across as a bullshitter. He's a pretty straight shooter, but does not talk like Niki Lauda does. And he said they don't think it's the problem with the upgrade. They think it's more of an issue of, I think one was the steering hydraulics, steering wheel hydraulics, and some fuel pressure problem with on Lewis's car. And some even suggested that, you know, these curbs are so not so friendly to cars that maybe that's what created the problem. And, you know, when I heard that, I thought of the problem Lewis had when he lost the championship in the final 2007 race in Sao Paulo. Remember what happened to him at the start where he went over the curbs at high speed?
Yeah.
And the system shut the car down because it thought something was going wrong?
Exactly.
So some damage could have been done to any of the support system and the complex wiring and whatever they have, piping in these systems. But we don't know. But I'm sure if it's an engine-related problem, Mercedes is not going to come out and say, oh, we have an engine problem. There are other, you know, there's always Male there to blame, put the blame on.
Or it could be an O-ring.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the famous O-ring also.
Thank you.
I mean, did we ever find out who manufactured that?
That O-ring?
Uh-huh.
I think it was 3M.
Or Sev Marshall.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, Romain Grosjean, man, you know, this kid, it's just a very sad how things have worked out for him and Nico Hülkenberg, two extremely talented drivers whose careers we have followed for many, many years, long before they got into Formula One. But it was a very, very pleasant surprise. He was in the point after 9 races. So very good for the one-time Geneva banker. And this happened on the team's 50th race, F1 race. So this was a happy day. I think it's a national holiday in North Carolina today.
Tomorrow and the next day, too.
Oh, good for them. And teammate Kevin Magnussen, K-Mac, he was right behind Grosjean in 5th. He has been the star of the team this season and has scored points in 5 races. Interestingly, you know, he has more points so far this season after 9 races than he had in the past 2 seasons together. And amazingly, he is 7th in the championship. He is very pleased, like he said after the race in an interview, that, you know, being 7th in the championship, he has already won his division. So that's very impressive. And that puts him ahead of Nando, Hülkenberg, Sainz Jr., Perez, and Ocon. And I'm happy for them. It's what they have done with the new team, that's really the way to go, Clark.
I concur.
And you know, the two cars, the two Haas cars were followed by Force India drivers, Esteban Ocon and Sergio Perez. I mean, they were so strong last year. What is happening there? I mean, looks like there is a serious shortage of cash and they cannot do more development work or produce more parts.
Yeah, the Vijay Mallya thing could be a problem. So hopefully somebody buys the team.
Yeah, the team is going to be sold very soon. I'm pretty sure there's so much talk and there have been some serious buyers or interest from buyers. And let's see how it works out. But I don't think this team will be under the ownership of Vijay Mallya too long. And now we come to the grumpy old man of F1, Fernando Alonso. He was 8th. Sauber, based in neighboring Switzerland, less than 400 miles away, had a great day with both drivers scoring points, Charles Leclerc 9th and Marcus Ericsson 10th. Man, Marcus Ericsson was very feisty in this race. It was good to see him do that.
Yes, that was very impressive. I agree. All of a sudden, he took one of those Kimi Räikkönen pills.
Yes. What do they have now? The two-hour pill?
Exactly.
Yeah, and the scrap Charles Leclerc had with, that was Lance Stroll, right, with whom he was fighting?
Yes.
That was also very, very impressive. Really enjoyed that. There was a lot of battles going on and a close battle, and this was really a fantastic race.
It's a great track. I love this short track. It's like, you know, it's like Talladega.
You call it like Talladega? Why?
Short track, fun stuff.
Yeah, the lap time is, it's the, like the shortest track in terms of lap time. But it is in a beautiful, beautiful setting, part of Austria.
Did you wear leather pants while you watched the race?
No, sir, that's not my scene.
Understood.
How about you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, good, good, good. Yeah, you know, this track has, I mean, the original form, Selkweg, which was the airfield circuit right next to it. And Lorenzo Bandini won a race there, his only F1 victory. And then, of course, you know, Roger Penske's only victory came here when it was known as Österreichring, or as Alan Jones used to call it, Ostrich Ring. It's high on the agenda for me to pay a visit to this track. Have you ever been to this track or Austria, Senor?
No, I have not, sir.
Yeah, I have also never been to Austria, so we may have to take the European Greyhound from London Victoria Station. and make it to Graz or Vienna or Salzburg. And all Ferrari-powered cars finished in the points, so that was a good day. And, of course, on the other hand, both Williams cars finished two laps down.
My, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, it's, you know, I was thinking that Lance Stroll's dad, he's a uber-successful businessman. This is what he's getting in terms of return. It's pathetic.
Yeah, it's sad.
You know, this is like paying for a Mercedes-Benz and getting a turbocharged Yugo.
Nice.
Yeah, just going nowhere. I thought, you know, what would be a good place for this kid, would be Team Haas right across the border.
Yep.
And he may have to pay some tariff on it. Or he can go to Toro Rosso.
Certainly.
If he brings $20 million, they will fire Brendan Hartley in 20 seconds.
10 seconds.
Yeah, I was being generous, you know.
Hmm.
They'll send him a text message, you know.
Okay, Pedro.
Yes, that's the way it goes sometimes. And anything you want to say about Lewis being livid on the radio when they did not bring him for tire change?
You know, that's the only thing I don't like. He's become a bit of a prima donna. I mean, just a little bit of bad luck, and all of a sudden he's, you know, everybody's fucking up, and, you know, I'm going to have a talk with everybody. And I have to admit, you know, Schumacher handled bad situations a little classier.
I think he was the best in terms of handling, among many other things, the bad situation. Do you remember when the Bridgestones were no match for Michelin? I mean, completely pathetic.
Yeah, that's when I used to giggle a lot on the program.
Yes, and the only thing he said was, we win together, we lose together. But I have to say, as far as the Lewis situation is concerned, is that we should be used to these kind of things. After all, nothing will come close to the pit stop blunders of Monte Carlo and Manchuria in his McLaren days. And like you said, you have to take the rough with the smooth. But, you know, it's interesting, you know, when there is a call to be made, looks like Mercedes, apparently this is the third time they have screwed up just this year. But anytime a team is making the right call, it's Ferrari and Red Bull, double stacking their drivers and still, you know, coming out very good. So, I don't know. Maybe they have some McLaren influence at Mercedes.
I don't know. It's interesting, but there are sometimes gremlins come up. I mean, it's hard to be perfect every day.
But I can understand his frustration. You know, if your engine blows up, it's one thing, you know. But if you do a tactical mistake, I mean, he basically, well, the car broke down. But had that not happened, you know, that car breaking down really saved that guy, James Vowles, Boutte, I think.
Very true. But no, not bringing Hamilton in when the virtual safety car was out was strange. They had the time. The pit lane was coming up. They had a few seconds where they could have said, okay, pit like everybody else. It was a blunder.
Yeah, they had more than a few seconds. I think they had almost half a lap, I think.
Yeah.
Now, half a lap is not very big at Red Bull Ring, but still, they had time to get this thing done.
Yeah, they seemed to hiccup a little bit.
Yeah, maybe there's something in their radler, you know.
Maybe they had too much, what do they eat in Austria?
Wiener Schnitzel.
Thank you. Maybe they had too much Grüne Veltliner.
There you go. Okay, now we come to Danny Rick. He was hoping to celebrate his 29th birthday on Sunday with third win of the season, but looked like someone left his cake out in the rain. His left rear tire was looking so bad that even Kimi commented on his team radio. Now, when Kimi starts talking on his own, you know things are really serious. And this was his third DNF of the season. In remaining races, he has always finished in the top five. And according to Christian Horner, his contract just needs sorting out some minor issues. I still have some concerns about Red Bull leaving Renault and going with Honda. Especially, I would love to see Max Verstappen become the youngest world champion, which I find it a little difficult in the next 2 years with Honda power. What do you think, Mr. Dalton?
Well, Honda could make some steps forward, but in the end, it's still going to be Ferrari, Mercedes next year, and maybe even the year after that. I think the big leap is in 2021 when there's big engine changes, but I don't know. Is Max going to be at Red Bull? Do they love him that much?
Yeah, he's going to be a very seasoned driver by then. But I would hate to see him not become the youngest world champion.
Do you have thunderstorms over there?
Yes, sir. Tampa, that's what it means, man.
Okay, I thought I heard a thunder.
Yes, sir.
Okay, beautiful. Continue.
Yeah, this is not NASCAR thunder. This is real thunder.
Okay. Thank you, Nas. Keep up the good work.
Talk about PC World and anything and everything is for sale. You know, they're trying to do a lot of graphics for Heineken. They had them in a previous race, and now they had this red star on the track. Are you digging it?
I like it.
Yeah, they have a lot of advertising, and maybe I think they're just getting to a point where it's just getting too much. But, you know, hey, Liberty Media owns it. They wrote an $8 billion check. They can do whatever they want.
I like the big F1 logo now. I'm starting to like that logo.
You like that logo? Good for you. It's red, which is good.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it's now starting to grow on me, and they had the big logo on the track with the graphics going on it. I thought that was great, and I like it now, which I didn't like in the beginning. But you know what? Sometimes change is good. I think Liberty is really pumping it up. I think next year is going to be even more exciting.
I think they are on the right track. And, of course, you know, it's hard to make changes anywhere, let alone in a multi-billion-dollar business, cutthroat as Formula One, with different people having vested interests. And, you know, they have opened up Formula One in many ways. So I think it's good. And not everybody's going to like all the changes. And also, you know, talking of changes, the time frame has been brought up, the schedule for the Australian Grand Prix, so which is good for us. The Formula One season will start a few weeks earlier. You like that?
Yeah, I do love it.
Yeah, and I think, 25 races may be too much, but I think if they can start the season in January like they used to, and run it till like early October and do two races a month, that'll be fantastic. Balanced. It could be a portfolio.
I concur. So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Marcus Ericsson. You're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
The Mondial will start from Leighton Buzzard, home base of our Senior Executive Vice President of Global Affairs, Mr. Peter Brazier. And he has a thought that he sent to me in an audio file, which you would like to play. Interesting idea. And I'm interested in hearing listeners' ideas, what they think and what their thoughts are on this idea from Mr. Brazier. So here we go.
Hi, Clark. Hi, Nasir. I've got this crazy idea, or as we call it, a daft idea. So greetings from jolly old England, and I'd like you to discuss this on the next podcast. Look, Formula One is a team sport, and unlike most other racing formula, with the exception of Le Mans, an F1 team can come out on top and keep that advantage for years and years. It's the best car in the field that will win. But the populace fans' emphasis is on the drivers. And as no driver ever won the World Driver Championship in anything but the best car, they tend to stay where they are, and they get it. And if they get it right, they can go on for years and years. On the other hand, we have great drivers who get to a team at exactly the wrong time. These we shall call Alonsos and Buttons. Ever since Senna and Prost got into serious driver contracts, we have been blighted by the prospect of a top driver sticking around in the best car of the moment and taking victory after victory and championship after championship. Here's my solution. When a driver wins a World Driver Championship, they must leave the team they won with. They cannot drive for them again. And they have to either go drive for another team or leave Formula One. I know this is fraught with driver and sponsor contract issues and the likes, but if it's written into the base of the sport and it's how the sport works, then obviously that would work itself all out. Further, when a driver wins three World Drivers Championships, they should retire from Formula One altogether. Simple. Le Mans and Le NASCAR await. This will stop repetitive seasons of one person in one team winning everything year after year. It will make the driver's position much more challenging, and it will open the doors to lots more new talent. Please discuss. Speak to you soon, guys. Bye.
Peter, keep up the good work. Always thinking, more zeros your way, Nas. I thought those were brilliant ideas.
Do you think there should be a cap on how long a person can race or age or stuff like that?
It might be a good idea. quicker young people getting a chance, you know? I mean, Kimi's been around since, what, 2001?
Yeah, also Nando.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I like Mark Martin, but I don't know. It's a little much.
Yeah, you know, one thing I really would not want to see in Formula One, because it is Formula One, is I don't want to see these drivers coming in. I mean, I don't have a problem if somebody's daddy is a trillionaire, but they should be backed by some level of success. You know, in the case of Lance Stroll, he did dominate European Formula 3, so I can understand that. But when you have drivers coming in with just money and nothing else, that's not very good for Formula 1 and for the real talent. I mean, you know, it's very sad to see drivers like Robin Freins, Robert Wickens, not get a shot in Formula 1 just because they couldn't come up with $8 or $10 million. So that's where my biggest, you know, Argentine beef is.
And those are relatively good reasons, Nasser. I agree with you. I want to see the sport remain as the pinnacle.
Yeah. Okay, so now let's do the Motorsport Mondial, and let's start with F1 for a change and back to Kimi. And now we have these reports, and looks like these are serious reports, that Kimi may go back to McLaren. So the silly season has started a couple of months earlier. If Nando can go back to the loving arms of Ron Dennis, anything is possible. After the French Grand Prix, there were reports that McLaren had also offered $20 million to Daniel Ricciardo, or maybe it was to Red Bull to release him. And what is $20 million for Red Bull? Now, if rumors of trying to get Kimi back are correct, does McLaren really believe a driver who hit the snooze button several years ago, this was written before Sunday's Grand Prix, who hit the snooze button several years ago, is really going to wake them up? If Kimi is going to be numero uno at McLaren, who will be number two? Karma?
I don't think so.
Yeah, you think this will happen, that he may go back?
No, I can't believe they would do that. I mean, Alonso's already had Kimi as a teammate, and we know what happened there.
Yeah, but see, if Alonso leaves, they need a very experienced driver. They cannot count on Lance Stroll. They cannot count on Stoffel Vandoorne and Lando Norris, a rookie. So I will not be surprised if he goes back there, to be honest with you. But, you know, there is more trouble for McLaren, as if on-track issues were not enough. According to a report on pitpass.com, the parent company is being investigated by the UK government. And just for time consideration, I don't want to get into details. So if anybody wants to read more, they can do a Google or go to pitpass.com and see what else is going on. So it's very sad to see what's happening with Williams and McLaren. And I just hope that next season is much better for them. I mean, look how, I mean, Renault engine is winning now. The team is doing well. They have two very good drivers. So it's very uplifting and it's, you know, forward thinking. So I like that. And I would love to see the same thing for Honda and Williams and McLaren, and I would love to see BMW or Porsche also come into Formula One. Dream the impossible dream. Okay, now we go to more motor racing from the Red Bull Ring, Formula Two. Very impressive win number four for Mercedes Junior George Russell, and he's the kid who's standing next to Toto Wolff during the race, during the F1 race, George Russell. Second was McLaren Jr., Lando Norris, Antonio Fuoco, who is a Ferrari FDA driver, Ferrari Driver Academy. He was third. Santino Ferrucci is the only American in Formula 2 this season. He was 10th, and he is part of the Haas F1 development driver. Sunday's sprint race was won by Russian Artem Markelov. George Russell was second and now takes over the lead in the championship from Lando Norris. Brazilian Sergio Sete Camara was third. Now, both Russell and Norris are rookie in GP2, and you know what happens if you win GP2 or Formula 2 in your rookie season, you go to Formula 1. So this is fantastic for both of them, and I wish them well, and all the other drivers too. Happy Tres, GP3. Ferrari Junior Callum Ilott was the winner on Saturday. Second was Leonardo Pulcini, and Alessio Lorandi third. Sunday's race 2 was won by English driver Jake Hughes. Pedro Piquet was 4th. Giuliano Alesi was 6th. And American Ryan Tewater was 7th. Now, I take that back. This was a reserve for Pedro and Alesi in the first race. And the Sunday's race was won by Jake Hughes, and Pedro Piquet was second in race two on Sunday. Ailot is leading the championship with 69 points. French driver Antoine Hubert is second with 63 points. And now, sir, a very, very exciting motorsports event, MotoGP from Assen in the Netherlands. This was 70th MotoGP race at this track. And there were like over 100,000 people here. It is being called one of the best ever races in MotoGP history. Action included Rossi running into the back of Lorenzo. Many lead changes when it was all over. Marquez was the winner from pole on his Honda. And the battle, you know what happened? 2-3 laps from the end, Marquez broke away from everybody, and it was obvious he was going to win. But up until then, it was Marquez leading, then it was Lorenzo leading, and other riders also took the lead. Rossi was there all in the thick of things. It was a fantastic race. I watched it, of course, on YouTube, and highly recommend if somebody wants to see action-packed motorsports. Alex Rins was second on a Yamaha. Alex Rins was second on a Suzuki. And Maverick Vinales on a Yamaha made it an all-Spanish podium. Marquez leads the championship. And check this out, Clark. He is looking good for his fifth MotoGP title in 6 years. Isn't that impressive?
Now that's impressive.
Yeah. And the kid has raced like six or seven times on American soil and has won every time. So very impressive talent. Now we come to IMSA, Watkins Glen 6 hours race winners driving an Orica LMP2. Versus Simpson, Misha Goikberg, and Chris Miller. Montoya in a Penske Acura was third. Paul Di Resta, cousin of who?
I can't even remember anymore.
Dario Franchitti.
He's nothing.
No, he's a big name. Just ask Ashley Judd. He was fourth in his Ligier, and one of his teammates was Bruno Senna. Okay, sir, now since the race was in Austria, and I think in the past we've done a goodie bag of previous Grand Prix races in Austria, today I thought maybe do a Das goodie bag about famous Austrian motorsport people, mostly drivers, but some other also. Shall I begin, sir?
Please.
Okay, we will start with one of the biggest names in motor racing from that era, and that would be Mr. Jochen Rindt. You remember him, obviously, right?
I do indeed.
Yeah. He was born in Germany, and after his parents were killed in an Allied bombing raid, he was taken to Austria and raised by his grandparents. He was a childhood friend of Dr. Marco. He really made his name in Formula 2 and scored his first Formula 1 victory at Watkins Glen in 1969 with Lotus, and this was the first ever F1 success by an Austrian driver, so good for him there. Now, our favorite man, Mr. Bernie Ecclestone, used to be his manager, and when Colin Chapman approached Jochen to leave Brabham and join his team, Jochen asked Bernie for his advice, and believe it or not, Bernie told him, if you want to stay alive and race for many years, stay with Brabham, but if you want to die trying to become world champion, then join Lotus. And we all know how that association ended at Monza, unfortunately, in 1970. Shortly before his death, and I've seen a copy of this letter in a book. Shortly before his death, Jochen had written a letter to Chapman expressing his concern how fragile Lotus cars were. And obviously, this did not go down well with ECBC. At Monza, of course, in 1970, Jochen did not want to drive the car without the wings, and according to his widow Nina, Chapman told him, either you drive this car or you don't drive at all. And that was Chapman at his best, master of simplicity. Now we come to Dr. Helmut Marko, now a larger-than-life character in F1 paddock and a savior and demon for young drivers through managing the Red Bull Junior program. He made it to Formula 1 and raced there briefly. His main claim to success as a driver is victory at Le Mans with Hees van Lennep in a Porsche, which was at that time and up until I think like 2010 or 11 remained the fastest ever Le Mans. So it's a very impressive performance. After his racing days were over, he ran a team in Formula 3000. Montoya was one of his drivers. He also had a team at one point in IRL, and he also managed the early careers of Gerhard Berger and Karl Wendlinger. You remember Carl Wendlinger, right?
Indeed.
The guy kept crashing with Michael Andretti in 1993. When Dr. Marco is not hiring and firing drivers, he is in the same business as was the case with Willie Weber. Hotel ownership. He owns a couple of nice hotels in his hometown, Graz. So if you're going there and you're staying at his hotel, make sure you tell him you do a good job in Formula One.
Bravo.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, now we come to this Niki Lauda, Andreas Niki Lauda, one of the greats of Grand Prix racing and three-time world champion. Niki was never shy with his opinion when asked about the car in the presence of Enzo Ferrari after his first test session with Ferrari at Fiorano. His response was to please tell the old man, car is a piece of caca. Much has been said, written, and movied about his 1976 accident and rivalry with James Hunt, so I will skip on that. His first Grand Prix victory came in 1974, and the following year he won his first world championship. His second championship came in 1977, and the third and final was in 1984, after the final race in Portugal. The race was won by Prost, and Lauda was second, which allowed him to win the title by half a point over Prost, of course. And Ayrton Senna was on the podium in this race as a Toleman driver. Lauda's final Grand Prix victory was scored at the expense of Prost in a close finish at Zandvoort in 1985. And I remember this race very well, watching it on live TV in San Jose, California in 85. Now we come to a young driver, Marcus Hüttinger. This was a young, talented driver and protege of Dr. Marco. He won the Austrian Renault 5 Cup. Do you remember in the late 70s, 80s, Renault 5 Cup was very popular in Europe?
Of course.
I remember their race. God knows how many cars were in that race. And I was on the back straight heading out towards the Parabolica. This was in 1982. And they had a race for Alfa Romeo, Alfa Suit. Remember those small Alfa Romeos?
Mm-hmm.
Those cars were very intense and loud. And what I remember about the Renault 5 race, very intense, very quick, but very quiet, but a lot of flames coming out of the exhaust. That was very impressive. So Marcus then won the Renault 5 Euro Cup event at Monza in 1977, which was a support event to the Italian Grand Prix. His impressive performance in the BMW Pro Car Series was rewarded by support from BMW, and they placed him in Formula 2. Unfortunately, he was killed at Hockenheim Ring in 1980 after a wheel from the car of Derek Warwick hit him in the head during the race, which was in the early, I think, like lap 3 or 4. Now we come to another famous Austrian driver, Gerhard Berger, now running the German DTM Championship. Berger came through the Tin Top Racing Series. He gave Benetton their first Grand Prix win in 1986 in Mexico City, going nonstop on Pirelli tires. He also won races for McLaren and Ferrari, and it was while driving for Ferrari that he survived a very serious fiery accident during the San Marino Grand Prix, ironically at Tamburello. His family owns a successful trucking company in Austria, and his nephew, Lucas Auer, is racing in DTM. And now we come to a name that some of our listeners may know, hopefully all of them know, Gustav Brunner. He was a Grand Prix designer for ATS, Ferrari, and Toyota when they came into Formula One, and he was also from Austria. His claim to fame, apart from being a very good engineer and designer, he was the first person to use carbon fiber in Formula One. John Barnard designed a car that was basically all of carbon fiber, but Gustav Brunner used carbon fiber on an F1 machine before John Barnard. As you know, Mr. Rogers, racing is all about speed, and one of the most common words associated with speed is Mach. And that comes from Ernst Mach, who was also from Austria. And so was Sigmund Freud, but that's another frame of mind. Thank you for listening. Wiedersehen till we meet again at Woodcut.
Thank you, Nasser. Keep up the good work. Outstanding. And now we're at Silverstone.
Yes, sir. And let me just give you an exciting, exciting information. We're going to have a very nice F1 Weekly Familia Festival. We're going to hook up with Dr. Mark, Mr. Peter Brazier, and Dr. Miguel. We're all meeting at Goodwood Festival of Speed. Mr. Adrian Wood is also coming, and he was also with us at the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa many moons ago and jubilaires ago. Okay. And then in Holland, I'm going there, which is the weekend after British Grand Prix for a F3 race. Inam Ahmed will be there. And our friend Louis Jensen, gentleman who was kind enough to give me a lap of the old Nürburgring some years ago, he will be there with his lady friend. So this is a fantastic trip, fantastic people, fantastic get-together, lots of hot dog, and lots of motorsports.
Keep up the good work, Nas. Any predictions real quickly?
I think it will be hard to bet against Lewis Hamilton at Silverstone. Once upon a time, he had a Finnish teammate who took the pole in a very wet British Grand Prix, and Lewis Hamilton did not like that. So you know how he responded on race day.
Exactly.
By dominating. So I think if Bottas takes the pole here, nothing against Bottas, I think history may repeat itself. But man, if Max Verstappen can go 2 for 2, this championship would really be on fire.
I like the fire. Nas, keep up the good work. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.